Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. You can see it, the smile on my face. You see my pearly whites? That is because I am, and I'm speaking with, and you're about to hear, veterinary dentist Dr. Jan Bellows. Good morning, Dr. Bellows.
Good morning, Steve.
Now, I think people may not know that there is such a thing as a veterinary dentist as a specialty in veterinary medicine. Now, your own private practice veterinarian will do certain things for sure, including a prophylaxis or cleaning. But when it goes deeper, I assume those are the clients that you see that are more problematic.
Right. The clients that should seek out a veterinary dentist after discussion with their own veterinarian should be if you have an animal that has special anesthesia needs, they have kidney disease, heart disease, they have a tumor that needs to come out that the veterinarian isn't comfortable with removing. If you have a fractured tooth, if your pet has a fractured tooth that needs a root canal, rather than extracting the tooth, the veterinary dentists are very comfortable with that type of procedure. If you have a situation where the pet has just so much periodontal disease that, you know, practically all the teeth need to come out, or if you have a cat that is, there's a syndrome where cats are allergic to their teeth, so all the teeth has to come out. Those are the reasons why you would seek out a veterinary dentist.
And we'll talk about some of those problems in a little bit. But let me start here. You've taught me this, particularly for older pets, if that dog or cat is acting normal except become finicky about food, and particularly with cats, people say, well, my cat is just being finicky. With small dogs, people often say that too. But what you've taught me, it's probably pain, and pain can result from any kind of pain even that doesn't seem related to the mouth, but most likely it is pain that is related to the mouth. The pet is not likely just being finicky, but is otherwise acting quote unquote generally normal. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Right. The biggest change after we treat what is the problem with the mouth is that the owner says, oh, it's just like my cat is a kitten again, or my dog is a puppy again. And they didn't realize that the animal actually was in considerable discomfort because they just can't talk. And the leading disease in both dogs and cats is periodontal disease because they don't brush their own teeth. And most clients aren't familiar with ways to help prevent periodontal disease, which we'll get into later. But once we take care of the periodontal disease, and oftentimes taking care of multiple teeth, the cat is not, or the dog isn't in pain anymore. And they start eating, they start grooming, they start being themselves again. And the clients, you know, kind of feel guilty. They said, oh, I didn't realize my cat was in so much discomfort.
Now, you've taught me so much over the years, and here's something that surprised me, and that was I would talk about, and still do, ways in which, for dogs or cats, you can counter-condition, desensitize, so they will accept their teeth being brushed. And I go through this process. It's, I don't know, 15-step or whatever process that takes some time to do. It takes some effort to do. And you said, no, Steve. No. People aren't going to do that anyway. And that, you're right, it may be the gold standard, Steve. However, let's talk more realistically. So here you are, an esteemed, extraordinarily respected, contributed to many textbooks about veterinary dentistry, is the author of paper after paper in veterinary medicine. And you're saying, no, forget about brushing teeth. We've got to find other ways in which we can help our pets. So you still feel that way, first? And secondly, all right, what are the ways in which we can help our pets? And for this question, we probably, the answer may be different for dogs and may be different for cats. So perhaps we should separate each
out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So let's talk about dogs first. And my go home, instead of daily brushing, which people, you know, 98%, because only 2% of the people brush their dog's teeth every day. So, and it has to be done every day. If it's less than every day, then it's virtually worthless. But the dental wipes seem to do a great job in removing plaque and tartar if you do it every day. And it doesn't really matter what's in the wipes, although some companies have solutions in the wipes that work better than other companies, but the daily wipes every day, and that is something that's active. Something that's passive, which also works, are daily chews. And the chews I give my own dogs is something called Yummy Combs, which is a product that has been shown to take plaque and tartar off teeth once they are accumulated, and it's delicious. I give my dogs two treats, Yummy Combs and a product called Vetrident, and they just chew on them right after I do the wipes. And we do this a couple of times a day. We do the wipes just once a day, but the treats are a couple of times a day. It's easy to do. And my pointer just had her teeth cleaned, and we hadn't cleaned them for 4 years before that because of the wipes. In cats, we use Q-tips that are dipped in tuna water, rubbed along the gum margin, not on the tip of the tooth, but on the gum margin. And tuna water doesn't really do anything other than the cats like the taste. But the outside surface, and that's the same thing with the dogs with the wipes, just do the outside surface. The tongue takes care of everything else. So you need to do both cats and dogs every day.
Now, for the lots of questions based on even what you just said. So for the tuna water, do we use a Q-tip? Do we use a cotton swab? What do we use?
We use the same type of Q-tip that they have in veterinary offices to clean out ears, the ones that are on the tip of an applicator stick. And the reason why we use those compared to the ones that we use on our own ears is the ones that we use to clean out ears in dogs, the tuft is a lot harder. So it's not so soft, and you want it to be harder to remove the daily accumulation of plaque. And it's really important that people understand that plaque builds up every single day. When you go to your human dentist and get your teeth cleaned, you come home and you put your tongue around your teeth and you say, it feels so great. The polish is great. It's all good. But you brush your teeth at night. How many people brush their pet's teeth or wipe their pet's teeth after they go to the veterinarian to have it cleaned twice a year? They don't. So it's important that we do this every single day.
All right. I want to talk a lot more, and we will talk a lot more, including concerns. You mentioned some cats can be allergic to their own teeth, I believe. We'll talk about that and much more when we come back with Dr. Jan Bellows on WGN. Veterinary dentist Dr. Jan Bellows is here, and in preparation for this interview, and this is the honest-to-goodness truth, I had my teeth cleaned yesterday, Dr. Bellows. Why is it? I really did. Why is it, though, that most of us feel so good, I think most of us feel so good after we have our teeth cleaned. Why is that?
Because the enamel is polished afterwards. You know, during the daily eating and chewing and eating sometimes things like potato chips and all, you have these little micro etching in the teeth that plaque tends to build on. But after you go to the dentist who ultrasonically cleans the teeth and then polishes them, the micro etching is gone and your teeth feel so smooth. And underneath the gum line, they irrigate and they put the polish, which oftentimes is cherry flavored. So you just feel like $1 million after you go to the dentist.
Now, when we have our dog's teeth cleaned or our cat's, and assuming there's no significant dental issue here, do they feel similarly better afterwards.
Well, here's the takeaway point. Animals get their teeth cleaned generally, different than humans. Animals go to the veterinarian to get their teeth cleaned when the breath smells or when there's plaque and tartar on the teeth. There is actual disease there. So it should be very rare, if almost never, that the veterinarian doesn't find something the matter, doesn't find a pocket that is holding food and debris that needs to be removed, actually, or sometimes the tooth needs to be removed if there's a lot of bone loss. And when that happens, the pet will feel absolutely better because they'll be out of discomfort. Both dogs and cats hide their pain. And after the treatment's done and after they come back for rechecks, all the clients say, wow, this is great. My dog is eating better than ever before, or my cat isn't rubbing its face and chattering anymore. And especially in cats, Steve, cats, half of the cats that you see, that mature cats, will have cavities and very painful. They call them tooth resorption. They're different than the cavities that humans have. They're not caused by drinking milkshakes. We don't know the cause of tooth resorption, but half of them have it. And the only treatment is taking out the tooth.
No matter what Dr. Bello says, I will continue to have milkshakes. All right. So I want to talk more about that. So they don't have cavities like we do, but explain what tooth resorption is. And what I didn't know, again, what I learned from you, is exactly how common this happens to be in cats.
Right. Well, it's also common in dogs. Dogs have it, 30% have it. Cats actually have 62% in the articles evaluating hundreds and hundreds of cats. But we don't know what causes them, and they form right at the gum line. So oftentimes you can't see them until the cavity has gone into the tooth and out a different place of the tooth. And once they're exposed to the oral cavity, they are extremely sensitive because they eat away the dentin. And the dentin has attachment to the nerve on the inside of the tooth. So every time that cat breathes, it's painful. And that's why it's important that you see your veterinarian specifically for a dental check at least twice a year. And in cats, very easy to diagnose. Generally, they take a Q-tip and they press it on each tooth, and they see a sensitive area, and that's the area that they need to look into further with x-rays. And generally, if they find one cavity, the cats they find one cavity on, they'll find more than one. And they did some really good research. And the cats that they didn't think any cavities are, a third of them had them. So that's why full mouth x-rays have to be insisted with your veterinarian. If your veterinarian isn't taking full mouth x-rays on every single professional under anesthesia dental, then find another one.
Well, actually, some number of years ago, and you'd have to fill in the blank, I would say fairly recently, 10 years ago even, most veterinarians did not do full mouth x-rays. Today, I think it's flip-flopped, where at least half, if not hopefully significantly more, routinely do full mouth x-rays.
Yeah, I'd say half.
Yeah, so we're moving in the right direction, right?
And what's really nice is a lot of veterinarians offer plans where you pay so much a month and you get the vaccines and you get discounts off other things there, and you get dental care, including x-rays. And their plans are generally once a year, but you can get a dental exam without any anesthesia twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
Another point I really want to stress is that the non-anesthetic dentals take away plaque and tartar from the crown, but that's not where the disease is. The disease is below the gum line, and that's why you have to see the veterinarian for that.
Yeah, so what you're referring to are some not-so-professional people out there saying, okay, we can do a dental because people are afraid of the anesthetic, which will be my next question. But some will say, some veterinary technicians, I'm afraid, some human practitioners, nurses and such will say, sometimes literally in their backyard or in the garage, say, okay, I can do a dental because I know how to do them, and I can do this for your pet, and we don't need anesthetics. This is something that we should just steer away from. Absolutely. I believe you would agree with that. And that's kind of what you just said. And I wanted to make clear what you were referring to if people don't know what that is. But we were talking.
And
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Okay. But and also in some veterinary practices, they offer the non-anesthetic dentals. And the veterinary dentists around the country see these cases after years of non-anesthetic dentals because they can't address what's going on below the gum line, and they need dozens of teeth removed, and the clients are really upset about it because they're just so afraid of anesthesia. And fortunately, anesthesia has gotten so much safer that it's rare when any adverse event happens.
Right, and that was my next question. So when you have a credentialed technician in a practice and a veterinarian with some experience, any experience really, talk about the safety of anesthetic and presuming the blood work was done before any procedure such as a dental.
So the reason why anesthesia is so safe now is it's three-pronged. First is the patient is evaluated, and if they all patients get some blood work beforehand because the anesthetic use has to go through the kidneys and the liver. And depending on their what they call ASA score, whether they're, you know, 6 months and no problems, or if they're, you know, much older and they have kidney disease or liver disease or heart disease.
Dr. Bellows, I know I'm interrupting. My fault for asking you the question right before we had to take a break, but we have to take a break. So you will hear Dr. Bellows' complete answer. That's a good tease, though, when we come back on WGN. He is a world-renowned veterinary dentist. He speaks all over the world. He teaches veterinary professionals about dentistry and pets, and now he's teaching us. Dr. Bellows, thank you for doing this, and thank you for being here this morning. So I left off right in the middle of your answer about anesthetic safety, and I think that is the number one concern of clients. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to offer a full answer. So go ahead.
Okay, sure. So anesthesia is really safe now because of three reasons. The first is the dog or cat is well evaluated, and that's done by blood work, by chest x-rays, by EKG, by blood pressure. You know, figure out, depending on their what they call the ASA score, or the risk of anesthesia, depending on if they have kidney disease or hyperthyroidism in a cat, or if they have liver disease, or if they have diabetes. If they can walk in, generally, they can walk out because it's very manageable once the veterinarian has that information. So that's one. Number two is that the anesthetic protocols are just so refined. We had a cat the other day that was in horrible kidney disease, had a very bad mouth, and just couldn't live with it. So we did the entire procedure under a fentanyl drip, and the cat got out, up beautifully, and it was a great procedure because we didn't have to give it any medicines that fouled the, you know, affected the heart or the kidneys or the liver. But anyhow, so the second is the anesthesia protocol. The third, and so important, is the monitoring. So many of the veterinarians now not only use pulse oximetry and blood pressure and EKG and temperature monitoring, but they also use something called end-tidal CO2. And you can tell if a dog or cat is getting in trouble with anesthesia within one breath, and that way you could mitigate it. Also, just like this veterinary dentist, there are veterinary anesthesiologists. And in our practice, I use a veterinary nurse who's specially trained in anesthesia. And that's all she does is anesthesia. And, you know, fortunately, we have excellent, excellent results. So it works out real well.
Yeah.
So anesthesia should not really be a major concern with clients anymore. Taking care of the teeth and also preventing problems. You know, I call the procedure a COPAP, a comprehensive protection, prevention, assessment, and treatment. And what you're trying to do is protect your dog or cat by preventing disease. And that's a big take home. Rather than treating the disease, going to the veterinary dentist because your pet's breath smells, prevent it like we do in humans. In humans, Steve, I mean, you went to your human dentist to clean your clean teeth. That would be great if that's what the majority of our clients do. But unfortunately, because the plaque isn't prevented so well, they come in and we have to take out teeth. So if they would decide to use products that are VOHC accepted, products that have passed what they call the dirty mouth test. And this is why I feed my dogs yummy combs, because if they do have plaque, the product itself will remove the plaque and tartar, not just plaque, but tartar also, and decrease the possibility of periodontal disease. Now, I have a 13-year-old pointer that doesn't have a lick of periodontal disease.
Well, and, it's your dog. It better he or she better not. But I want to circle back. You mentioned yummy combs earlier, and you mentioned again. And you do so because I know this is new technology, and I think it's worth us taking a moment to explain what yummy combs are and how they work.
Yeah, so Yummy Combs was developed by a wonderful person. The company is called Pets Best Life because he believes that pets should have the best life ever. And he and his wife are just so dedicated to animals. And I've worked with them as a consultant for years. And they are constructed with like honeycomb little holes that the animals chomp into to help squeegee off plaque and tartar and to help remove a lot of the tartar, which is rough on the teeth. And my dogs, we give it to them at least twice a day, and they absolutely love it. And they're what they call VOHC accepted. And VOHC is the Veterinary Oral Health Council. Your listeners may want to go on VOHC.org to check out products that at least decrease the accumulation of plaque and tartar by 20%. But Yummy Combs also went through testing that was called a dirty mouth study. So they started with animals that had plaque and tartar compared to the normal VOHC testing, and they found significant decrease in plaque and tartar once they started eating yummy combs every day. So it's a win for everybody.
You know, when you go to the pet store online or a brick and mortar pet store, you see product after product that promises we are a dental product. We care about your pet's teeth. We, you know, whatever it says on the packaging. Is this why VOHC, the Veterinary Oral Health Council, was created in the first place to determine what's real and what is just marketing?
And what's safe. The worst thing that you can feed a dog is an antler. People go into that's the number one cause of fractured teeth on why we do root canals, is people give their dogs bones, nylon products, and antlers. So when you go to the pet store, just pass right by there. The other products, you can virtually say anything you want on a bag. whitens teeth, freshens breath, no GMOs, made in the USA. You could say that as long as it doesn't say cures periodontal disease or treats gingivitis, but it can say anything it wants to say with or without research. So VOHC was created about 26 years ago to at least give the public confidence that the products that are accepted will at least decrease plaque and or tartar by 20%. So it doesn't cure it, but it really helps. If you got to give your dog something as a treat, give it a VOHC accepted product.
But I wonder, and we'll talk about this when we
17 dog accepted. Yeah.
When we come back, we'll talk about what products you might give in general, you know, like toys that the dog chews on and rubs against. And I wonder if dry food helps dogs or cats remove plaque and tartar. I also want to talk about stomatitis in cats. We'll do that when we come back on WGN. Esteemed veterinary dentist Dr. Jan Bellows is here. I always enjoy talking with you, Dr. Bellows. I always learn as well. And I know our listeners are. And one of the questions I get, and I suspect you get very often, dry food versus moist food, not from a nutritional perspective, but is it true that dry food will take away some of that plaque and tartar?
No.
There you go. No.
They actually did research on, you know, dogs that were fed, dogs and cats that were fed dry food versus wet food, and then they, without any other care, without toothbrushing or wipes or Q-tips or anything like that, and they found out it was the same. Now, the difference is semi-moist food, the ones that that you'll feed cats in little packages, that increases plaque because it becomes sticky like tuna, peanut butter on the teeth. So that will not be a great food for dental care. But feeding dry food is like feeding cookies. I love chocolate chip cookies. I like hard chocolate chip cookies, but they are not going to be good for the teeth.
However,
there are great dental diets. And you can go to vohc.org to find out the dental diets that actually work to decrease plaque and tartar.
Now, you point out antlers break teeth and do far more harm than good. Are there toys out there, without necessarily mentioning brand names, but you can, it's, you know, I have no problem with it, but that the dogs chew against, if you will, the toy, and therefore it works as a quote-unquote toothbrush?
Not so much as a toothbrush, but generally, I mean, dogs just love to chew on things. And any Kong toy, K-O-N-G, is generally considered to be safe. So that's the toys that we recommend. You can fill some of them with peanut butter, and they like to chomp on that. There are many companies that make toothbrush-like toys. And in theory, you would think they work well. But what happens is oftentimes they have rubber tips. And the rubber tips, just like the rubber finger toothbrush, they do nothing. All they do is they push the plaque around the tooth. They don't remove it. You actually need bristles. And they're hard to clean on toys. So toys by themselves don't clean teeth. But they make dogs a lot happier.
Yes.
You want to feed something that's safe.
What about those finger brushes that you mentioned for dogs, small dogs in particular, or for cats?
Total waste unless they have bristles. If they have bristles, then they're great because they can get below the gum line. But the ones that many folks, you know, promote for little puppies, they're just rubber tips and they just push around the back. They don't take off anything.
Okay. You mentioned way early on in the conversation a condition with when cats are, you said, this was your term, allergic to their own teeth, I think was the way you put it. I believe you were talking about stomatitis.
Yes. The medical term is feline gingivitis stomatitis, where they have inflammation around the teeth that extends all the way to the back. And it is all caused by plaque. And unfortunately, plaque builds up on the teeth and you can't get it all. And that's why they become inflamed. And the treatment of choice is actually removing either all the teeth from the canine's back or, in most cats, all the teeth. And you say, oh my goodness, isn't that horrible? But it's not horrible, and it really works.
Oh, so a couple things about that. You said from the canine's back, you meant the canine teeth. We're still talking about cats and not canines, right, to be clear.
Yes.
And secondly, there are perspective, and I don't know that you're involved in it, and we funded some research in this looking at other potential treatments coming down the line. They're not here yet for stomatitis, which you said inflammation, but I want to make a point of saying this is an exceedingly painful condition for cats who will even stop eating as a result.
And they stop grooming, and the treatments coming down the line are only for cats that don't get better. There's 20% won't get better once you take out all the teeth. And the treatments coming down the pike are stem cells treatment.
Exactly.
And they're doing that at University of California. But that's only on cases that all the teeth have been taken out and still don't get better, but they've had really good results with those.
Right. And as you know, I'm on the board of the Every Cat Health Foundation, so I know that we have funded some of those studies, and they look promising, but right, it's not necessarily for every cat. And so far, we've not, as far as I know, you would know more, learned any way to prevent stomatitis or even predict which cats will have that condition. Mm-hmm. How do you know your cat might have it?
Well, the first thing I tell clients to do is to flip the lips and take a look at the teeth. It should be just a pink gums, just like on our own, and there shouldn't be inflammation, and you should be able to take a Q-tip and gently rub against where the teeth hit the gum line, and there should not be bleeding. If there is bleeding, then a trip to the veterinarian is important to see if your cat has tooth resorption, periodontal disease, or stomatitis. If it's just gingivitis, a teeth cleaning and a sealant placed on the teeth and daily home care is curative. Won't get any worse. But once it's periodontal disease, it tends to be progressive. And early stages can be managed, but eventually you wind up taking out the teeth.
I can't believe we only have a minute left here, actually a bit less. What about the drops? What about the drops you add to water? Are those worthwhile?
Yes. Some of them have VOHC acceptance. There's something called BioTrade put out by DEKRA that has VOHC acceptance, which is good. But out of all the ways to prevent plaque and tartar, I feel that the water additives are the weakest. But it's something that the cats don't feel like they taste it, which is great, and it helps. But I feel like they need something mechanical, whether it's daily wipes or Q-tips every single day.
Well, here's what I feel. Our radio show needs to be longer to talk with you. Dr. Jan Bellows, veterinary dentist, you know it's always a pleasure and a learning experience when I speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
In recent years, there's been a movement to remember, rightly so, what Memorial Day is supposed to be about, remembering those who valiantly served our country or those who serve our nation, and especially those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. According to various sources, about 700,000 Americans have lost their lives since World War I, which includes about the time military working dogs were first utilized. Now, no one knows how many more lives would have been lost if it wasn't for the dogs. But clearly, we're talking about thousands of lives, American military working dogs have saved, at least, it is said, 10,000 lives in Vietnam alone, and that number has likely tripled since then. Just how many military working dogs have lost their lives defending their soldier handlers and ultimately our nation? Well, no one really keeps tabs of those numbers, but the number goes well into the thousands. Well, even a greater number have suffered injuries. At one point in time, those injured dogs weren't even treated. They were merely considered equipment. In Vietnam, valiant dogs were even left behind to die when American soldiers came home. Though our military working dogs today don't often get the treatment they do deserve from our government, at least it's way better than it once was. And while the dogs are often returned today to even reunite with their handlers once they retire, their medical care, though, is still not supported by the government. That needs to change. Just as many human members of the military return home with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder syndrome, we now know the dogs can suffer the same emotional damage. Again, government provides no support for this for the dogs. Having said that, the support provided for soldiers with PTSD, most consider inadequate as well and outdated. Ideally, for many, service dogs might be the best solution for PTSD, but that's kind of another story altogether. However, check this out. The U.S. government, Department of Defense, even on their website, has devoted to 1,600 military working dogs who are today actively serving all branches of the armed service, and the U.S. Department of Defense, rightly so, celebrates those dogs as we should celebrate all who have served our nation on Memorial Day, but I do include the military working dogs. So why do cats purr? Well, for many reasons, and certainly one is to express contentment. They're saying, I'm happy. But they generally purr to self-calm, like hearing calming music to themselves, which can also calm cats, by the way, the calming music I'm talking about. They purr to calm their kittens. One reason why they purr is while they're in pain, they seem to be calmed when they purr. A cat's purr vibrates at a frequency range associated with bone growth and tissue repair. Some researchers now believe that cats evolve purring as a sort of self-healing mechanism, and it turns out their purring may help us. You break your arm, get a cat, and that cat will purr to heal your arm. Well, to some extent, that's true anyway. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.